Small town charm, small town hero, medical optometry, game changer. Today it's going down. We're going to talk about everything medical optometry that will elevate your practice. And we have the one and the only and the game changer and the king. That's right, king of medical optometry, Dr. Kyle Clute. Let's go.
This is a Defocus Media production.
What are your jobs?
What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glovin.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, resident optometry nerd.
And welcome to Defocus Media, optometry's number one podcast, where we discuss the hottest topics, latest technology, eyewear, practice management, and more. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glovin. So excited to be here today because we have another star as we always do. But this star is a little different, right? He brings that charm to small towns. He takes a small town and make it feel like a big town because he understands culture, he understands flavor, but most importantly, he understands medical optometry. And today we're going to really break down Kyle's journey in eye care. But I'm really going to, you know, extract all this great information on how you can build a medical practice and take it to the next level. Kyle, man, I'm super excited to have you on the podcast today. Thanks so much for hanging out with me, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited to have the conversation.
Yeah, man. So, you know, before we get started, I always like to break down who I'm having a conversation with. So if you don't mind maybe sharing a little bit about your background, family, where you're from, where you went to school, and maybe even a fun fact, if you don't mind. We love fun facts.
Well, I think I've got a good fun fact for you. I'll start, though, with I'm a farm kid from central Nebraska. You know, grew up in a town of 400. I had 16 in my graduating high school class, so very small. Went to Nebraska for undergrad. And actually, the fun fact is my undergrad degree is in meteorology and climatology. So actually, quite the change in careers, right? Did some, you know, storm chasing and saw some tornadoes and have pictures to prove it. So that's kind of fun. But then, you know, things changed a little bit. The career path obviously changed. I had a close family member that, or a close family friend that owned a private practice in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I got to know him well. And I enjoyed it. I was an optician before I went to optometry school, and I kind of fell in love with the profession. You know, as you would agree, we just have an awesome profession to be able to do all the things that we can do. So
no doubt.
But I went to ICO, Illinois College of Optometry, and then did a residency post ICO in Michigan, Battle Creek, Michigan, at a VA hospital there, and. You know, I guess the way that my story kind of begins and how it leads into my kind of my fascination, I guess, or my obsession with medical optometry is that my idea as I was coming out of residency was that I really didn't want to, I laugh at it now, but I really told myself that I hope I never have to use a phoropter again. Like, I hope I don't refract. I hope I don't have to fit a single contact lens. I don't want to see, excuse me, anybody under 12 years old, you know, unless they have some, you know, disease that I need to be the hero on. And for the first 3 years of practicing, I practiced basically that way in a referral clinic. And I got to the point where I just felt like I really enjoyed that, but I wanted to make it happen in more of a comprehensive manner and in primary care. So I left that, and that's kind of where I'm at now. I've got two locations, one in Omaha, West Omaha, and one in a small town in Iowa, about 45 minutes away from there. So yeah, it's quite the journey. Lots of little steps, you know, along the way with all the different background. And but I love, like I said, I love our profession. I think there's so much opportunity. There's so much responsibility too, right? We have a ton of responsibility with our patients, and I think we can provide so much care for them when we do a lot of the things we can do at the primary care level.
I love it. I love it, man. Incredible story. Love the journey. Really love that you were an optician before you became an optometrist. And, you know, it's funny that you didn't want to have anything to do with glasses and contact lens. yeah. but you were an optician prior. Now, either it was a hot ass mess while you were an optician, and you didn't have anything to do with it, or you just developed that new love. One of the two, but I'll let you call that, my friend.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Pretty interesting story. Now, you know, I was reading up a couple of articles on you, man, and the one thing that I love about you is that you're all about culture. And I love how you incorporate that into your practice, and you incorporate it into your team members and also your patients. I would love to really kind of unpack, you know, where did that come from? Is that something that was instilled in you as far as core values and culture at an early age, or as you grew and became more of a businessman? Is that something that just kind of, you know, spark from, you know, just doing business and work day in and day out? Where did that come from?
That's a great question. I guess I'll just keep talking and I'll try to unpack that, because I don't know if I've really thought about that before. But I think it goes back to, you know, going back to, I grew up in a town of 400, like I said, and my family there, it's a pioneer family. And so, you know, I was the first, basically, you know, boy or son in the line of farmers that chose not to farm. And so, you know, there was just this, there's this local community and like this real commitment to the people around you, as well as the traditions that I try to, you know, obviously in optometry, and I'm in West Omaha, you know, suburban, but I think that there's something that we can do as optometrists in our practices, is that we can kind of capture that that small town hospitality vibe that I think is, and that's the phrase that we use that's our first core value at our practice, is small town hospitality. And that's just that mindset of like, hey, when I have my patients, when our patients come to our practice, we're gonna just treat them like they're our neighbors. You know, we're gonna treat them like they're in our community, because they are, right? Both because I think it's the right thing to do, and I just feel like in this day and age in our culture, you know, the kind of the disconnection that we're all feeling a little bit, not to get, you know, into like the political weeds or anything else like that. But I think there's just people are yearning for connections. And if we can bring some of that back just through our practice, I really desire to do that. I tell my staff all the time, when a patient comes in, like we want to just connect with them in a way of a lot of different levels, right? We obviously are here for eye care, right? At the end of the day, we're trying to help people make the best decisions about their eyes so they can see well for life. That's our mission statement. But beyond that, like, I really just want to care for people. I really want to help people feel well. I want to serve people. And I think it's through that small town hospitality that we can find good connections. Like I said, I tell my patients or my staff all the time, I want my patients to feel like they're coming into our office and they're going to have a cup of coffee with us. You know, they're sitting down at the local C store and we're going to be able to like, hey, how's your family doing? And they're going to be, because they're going to share things. You know that, they're all about the people, you know, your patients share things with you in a lot of detail, and you're there and you got to listen. And they, you know, there's people that need you to listen and provide counsel and advice that's beyond eye care sometimes. So I think it's important for us to train our staff to feel that and desire that connection. And we've tried to hired people in our office that really we hired based upon personality, not based upon their, you know, previous experience. You know, we just wanted people that were connectors, people that were empathizers, and everything else we can teach. Everything else we can teach the optics, and we can teach the, you know, how to work up a patient and the calls and all that. But we wanted the, you know, specific type of personality to really love on people.
I love it, man. And you know, when I hear that, I hear community-centered culture, right? And it makes sense coming from that small town. So you really, you know, sum that up precisely. And you actually set me up for this next area that I want to dive in. You know, one thing that's been hot in optometry over X amount of years is the medical model, right? There are a lot of doctors that are trying to find their niche in medical optometry, but they find it, but they don't really know how to run the business aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
And today I'd really like to unpack, you know, three areas that you are truly king in, and that's ocular disease management, appropriate billing and coding, and then also the integration of vision and medical insurance. Because I feel like those three pillars is what really allows you to grow into medical optometry. And you being in a small town, you know, you pretty much are the king out there. You're doing everything, I'm pretty sure, right, to help those patients, because there's probably no ODs or ophthalmologists close by where they can get the service and the care that they need right away. So I really want to kind of break down those three topics. And I really want to start off by just talking about ocular disease management. I know pretty broad term, but I would really like to break that down from your eyes and your perspective to help educate my colleagues out there how to build a medical practice, Kyle.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll start with a little bit of my background and story, because I think it helps understand where I'm coming from with that.
Sure.
Is the reason why I left the, and we have lots of amazing colleagues that are specialized, you know, and I want to make the disclaimer that I'm not anti-specialization or anything like that. I know I come across as that way to some, especially with some articles that I've written in the past, but I want to make a disclaimer, like, you know, we have colleagues that are, you know, glaucoma, dry eye gurus, and just phenomenal at those things. And I love that. Yeah. And I learn a ton from those people. But what I learned, or what drove me to primary care, is that I really found that in my practice modality, I wanted to provide, not that I didn't want to specialize, it's just that I wanted all of those specialties to be in one spot.
Right.
So I have a little bit of a, when I hear a word specialty, you know, I think what we're really talking about is like treating, you know, maybe using a scleral lens, or we have IPL in our practice, or treating dry eye, or we're doing BV, you know, therapy or something like that. But the reality is how I've tried to create a practice or and help other doctors build their practices is to really do all that in one location. And that could just be under one doctor or multiple doctors. So I don't really see them as specialties. I just see them as different avenues of treatment, because at the end of the day, if the MiSight lens is the best evidence-based treatment for my, you know, 9-year-old myope, then yeah, I shouldn't be, you know, I should have the courage to just fit them with that lens or an ortho K lens. It shouldn't be, I shouldn't think of it as a specialty. If it's evidence-based and it's the best option, we should be able to do it, or we should be doing it and have the courage to do it in our practice. Same with a scleral lens for a keratic cornus patient. Same with, you know, I know it's expensive to have all that equipment, but same with, you know, if we have an inflammatory, you know, pathway dry eye patient that we should be doing IPL on, let's figure out a way to get IPL in our practice. Whether it's, you know, you do it specifically or maybe one of your colleagues, that's like the ultimate vision for me and my practice. And what I want to help other doctors do is bring in like the full gamut of things, not think of them as specialties, but think of them as just specific treatments that are all part of comprehensive optometry.
Yeah.
And I think when we think more like that, I think we could make all of our primary care practices go further and faster. Now, you mentioned the three areas, right? And obviously that's hard, you know, it's difficult. And it's hard to like pull that off, right? Because you've got billing and coding issues, you've got managed vision care, and you've got to have the expertise of being able to manage all those conditions, not necessarily like, you know, not just, you know, managing dry eye, but you also have to figure out, okay, I got to blend my dry eye clinic with the patients with diabetes and the patients with glaucoma, because there's so much interaction between, you know, those types of patients. So, you know, that's where I feel like we have at iCode Education, Chris Wolf and I have really come up with a really good process and a system to help doctors to integrate those things. And it really comes down to being able to understand your billing and coding, right? Yeah. You got to understand like, hey, what 99 codes do I need to use? Because if you don't use your 99 codes well, you're not going to actually realize the true value of that medical care. And then you're not going to really want to bring that patient back for that medical evaluation, because you will be skewed in your understanding of how much money or profit that's going to get you, right? So there's the disease component to it, or the aspect to it, and then there's also the billing and coding aspect, and then there's also the, hey, is this profitable or is this not?
Right.
And the reality is it is profitable, but you got to be, you know, up to speed with the new 99 codes and billing and coding and understanding that whole, you know, realm of things.
No, I want to spend a little bit of time on this billing and coding, because I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we love to help people. We help people live their best lives. We help them see better, live better, whatever you want to say. But if we don't get paid, we can't continue to provide those services, because we can't employ our team members, we can't buy the instruments, and we can't take care of our families, right? I'm curious to know, you know, how many people, what percentage with the folks that you consult with are undercoding when it comes to medical visits? I mean, are you seeing, you know, more, you know, 992 codes, what does that look like in comparison to, you know, your 3 and 4? Like, where do you stand when you consult with folks in regards to that? Because I feel like there's a lot of money that's being left on the table, because to your point, people are not educated on how profitable this can be if you do it the right way.
Yeah, there's, great question. There are very specific numbers that we look at, but I'll back up a little bit, because I think it starts with the, I'm a big mindset guy. I really like talking about, you know, everything that we do, every action and behavior that we take, there's a belief that underlies that, right? Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, if we are going to, you know, it goes back to core values, right? If we believe, if we have these convictions, right, we're going to act a certain way. The same thing that we see with billing and coding a lot of times. Like, I could tell another doctor or explain exactly how to use, like, hey, you're going to match the 993, you should use 3 and 4, sometimes even 5 sometimes, and here's how you do that. At the end of the day, what happens is they get to the point where they're about ready to sign that code, but they may think, you know what, they didn't take too much of my time or expertise, or I know, you know, Sally, and I'm just gonna, it probably was a 4, but I'll put it as a 3, you know? And I think there's, and the only reason I'm projecting that, or I'm saying that, is because I know I've done that myself. Like, I feel that tension in myself of like, am I that valuable? And at that point, you have to have that conviction of like, yes, like what we provide is unbelievably valuable, right?
Absolutely.
And so don't be afraid to code at the highest level possible. And actually, you know, it really just comes down to our responsibility of doing the right things. But getting to your exact question, you know, we do see a lot of undercoding, and specifically the KPI. We have about like 8 or 9 KPIs that we talk to doctors and other practices about. And one of them that we kind of start with is called the 99 level 3 versus the 99 level 4 code. Okay. So we basically go in and we add up all your level 3s, and then we add up all your level 4s, whether it's established or new, and then we basically, the metric is 3 divided by 4. So 3 versus 4, it's that ratio.
Okay.
And based upon what we found, based upon the standards of care and essentially how the bell curve works with coding across the country, is you should be right around 1 to 1.5 when it comes to your level 3 versus your level 4.
Okay.
And if you're doing that, you're prescribing a lot of medications. You're seeing, you know, you're prescribing medications for dry eye. You're seeing a lot of dry eye. You're seeing a lot of glaucoma, and you're probably prescribing or not prescribing, but assigning the level of codes pretty appropriately. And so we like to see right around 1-to-1 ratio between 993 and 994.
Gotcha.
Unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of practices between that number is between 5. They're assigning between 5 and 15 times the number of level 3s versus the level 4s. And so, you know, when you look at it, there's about a $30 difference between that. And if you're a practice, or if you're seeing 2,500 to 3,000, you know, patients a year, and maybe you're doing 300 to 400 level 3s and 4s, that's a lot of money left on the table.
That adds up. You know,
that adds up fast, right? So that's the biggest number we see. And honestly, that's where, when we're consulting with a doctor or practice, that's where we start. Because if you can fix that and figure out 3s and 4s really well,
right,
and get that racial balance, then you realize, like I said before, you realize the value of your care Yeah. And then you're ready to then implement some protocols, whether it's dry eye or glaucoma, macular degeneration, diabetes. And then you're going to see the value of that as you start to manage those patients well.
Well, I love that. And it's like, you got to start with knowing where you stand, right? What does it look like? And then from there, you can build out the protocols. You can bring in the equipment and you can see if it's worth whatever you're looking at investing. If you're undercoating and you're trying to get this expensive piece of equipment, it doesn't make sense to invest in until you change your habits and they become behaviors, right? So I love that mindset. I feel like that's going to be the theme of today's podcast, right? Mindset makes a big difference.
I'm guessing James Clear's Atomic Habits is up behind you there somewhere, isn't it, back there? Gotta be.
You got a pretty nice collection, too. I think our collection is very similar. Are you in my house?
No, isn't it great? There's nothing like a good bookshelf, right? Just the best.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. You know, it's interesting that as optometrists, we don't like to, you know, really maximize on the value that we create for patients. I think sometimes because we're able to diagnose things quickly, we feel like we should not get paid a lot for it. I'm a firm believer that when you walk into my office, you're walking into my office because you know I'm the expert. You know I have the answers. And you know if I don't have the answers, if I feel like I don't, I'm going to put you in the hands that someone has the answers to whatever question or problem that you may have. But I went through a lot of schooling, a lot of education. And because I think quickly doesn't mean I should get paid a fraction of what I should get paid. So all of my colleagues out there, all my students, all my new graduates, and even my seasoned doctors, get paid what you're worth. You have put in a lot of time to get your education. Your team members cost a lot to be in that office. Margins are getting cut every day. So make sure that you get paid for the value that you're creating for that patient. We save lives every single day. People think what we do is priceless. So just make sure that you do what you're supposed to in that exam lane and make sure you get paid for it. And make sure you partner with people like Kyle, right? Simply because you create or have a platform that can really help to elevate our colleagues out there. Talk to me a little bit more about just in general what iCode education does. I mean, I know you touched on some of it here, but let's kind of dive into that a little deeper because I know that really goes into the management, the coding and billing, and the integration of vision and medical insurance as well.
Yeah, thanks for that. I'll say one more thing to your awesome soapbox there because it was right on. Well,
look,
well,
I'll get on these soapboxes, man. I'll go on.
I love it. It was great. Is that one way that I say it too is that I just want optometrists to really believe, and it comes back to the belief, right? The conviction that we are the best trained, best positioned primary eye care providers, period. Like no question about it. Yeah. Best trained, best positioned. And when you put us in that position, like we have a response, it is our responsibility to practice to the highest scope that we can, as well as to find, not selfishly to charge what that value is, but really it is. It's like, hey, if you really believe that, then you shouldn't have any, you know, really any hesitancy to bill the way that we should and charge the way that we should for our expertise. So, I appreciate that. So yes, iCode Education, what we have tried to put together is what we call Comprehensive Optometry Simplified. And so, what it is it is basically an online, it's on-demand courses, it's online membership that allows you to have, you know, unlimited access to courses that include dry eye protocol. How do you build a dry eye practice? How do you build a glaucoma practice? Essentially a protocol for each one of those. Really, we go through the top 7 to 8 chronic conditions that we're gonna see in primary care or in comprehensive optometry. And then we also walk you through if you're having troubles with billing and coding. We have a 9-9 versus 9-2 billing and coding course that you can take on there to help you out. But in addition, what we found that, you know, we can all go to CE, we can all take online courses, but what really moves the lever in terms of change, like we really want optometrists to get better. We really want improvement. So we we also allow them, as part of Comprehensive Optometry Simplified, to have online access to Chris Wolf and I as the coaches on there, so they can email through a message board, and they can ask questions anytime they want, and we can answer them. As well as, we have a monthly mastermind group meeting with everybody in the membership, just to walk through about 60 to 90 minutes a month, where if anybody has questions or they want to get feedback on their protocol, it's kind of like an office hours, where we can bounce ideas off each other and try to get better that way. So it's pretty fun. We've just launched this month, and we're picking up a lot of practices and a lot of doctors right now, and we'll kind of fully launch once we get started at the end of the month and in May to move forward with that. So we're pretty excited about the opportunity there.
Wow, fantastic. And I know that you guys have something that folks can download as well, right? If you don't mind sharing that with the listeners and followers out there as well.
Yeah, so it's basically what I talked about before, the KPIs. So it's 9 KPIs to help your medical optometry practice grow. And if you want something that's free and quick, just go to, I think it's on iCode Education, if you go to our website, and you'll just download the free PDF. And it's just going to break down the top 9 KPIs that we are using to evaluate your practice. And I would love for you all to, if you're listening, to download that and just run your numbers. Like Daryl said a little bit ago, the first step is awareness. The first step is just look at your numbers. It's going to take you probably 10, 15 minutes to just find those numbers and run them, and then just see where you're at. And my best recommendation is, like I said, start with those 9-9 codes. And the goal, with all those KPIs, the end goal, the cream of the crop KPI, two of them would be revenue per OD hour. When we talk about the best, I would say the ultimate KPI for optometry practices, I believe, is not revenue per exam. I think it's revenue per hour. Okay. That's what we really want to focus on. And the other one is refractions, or basically 9-9 codes. So the total amount of 9-9 codes divided by the number of refractions. And we want that to be 50 to 80%. Okay. So what that means is you are over half the time that you're doing a refraction, you're using a 9-9 code as well. Right. So what that says, it's a great metric for how much you've integrated your medical care into your comprehensive management. So if you're 50 to 80%, using 9-9 codes for the number of refractions that you're doing, basically what you can say is, hey, I have half or more of my practice right now, revenue, my exam revenue is coming from medical insurance. So I now have the option to make managed vision care optional, right? And the reason I say it that way is because I haven't dropped managed vision care. My numbers are above 50%, but I still use it because I think it's a great tool, marketing tool to bring in new patients to the practice.
It's a marketing tool.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it, there's kind of a movement right now that, there's a big portion of our doctor population that wants to be free of it and wants to get away from it. And it's seen as really, it's kind of polarizing. You either see it as really negative, you hate it, or it's 100% of your income. And the reality is we have to use it. We got to be smart with it and utilize it to grow our practices. And that's why we use that metric. And so you can, if you get to 50 to 80% with that number, then you can make it optional. But personally I'm keeping it. So, but it's a really nice, KPIs, the 9 KPIs, a great place to go and start looking at your practice.
And what we'll do for everyone that's listening, because this is going to be on all podcast platforms, in the companion post, we will have a link to this. That way you can hit that and go to it and download it and partner with Kyle and his team, because I want you to be able to take your practice to the next level. When you do better, eye care does better. So make sure you incorporate these different techniques and strategies in your practice to elevate our profession and to be able to continue to spread the gospel of us being primary care providers that elevate healthcare, not just eye care, but healthcare in general, right?
Right.
A couple questions for you, man, before we end everything. A lot of new graduates, students, you know, seasoned millennials listen to this podcast. And you're full of knowledge, you know, from just understanding the importance of knowing your purpose, your core values, to running a profitable practice. You know, what advice would you give to a new graduate student coming out of school today? Because when you and I graduated, optometry looked completely different from what it looks like now. And a lot of these students are coming out, in my personal opinion, sometimes with, you know, wants and desires that I think is just wild and crazy, to be honest with you. You know, and I got all love for my students, all my mentees. I'm not calling y'all out. I'm just saying, you know, you got to put in some work before you get to a certain place. But what advice would you have for all of my new graduates and soon to, graduate students that are out there in eye care world?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it would be you know how they talk about finances, how the recommendation when you got out of school is like, hey, keep living like a student.
Yeah.
Keep living like a student, pay things off, you know, keep living like a student for as long as you can until you get things paid off. I would give the same exact advice in terms of learning, right? Mm. Keep thinking like a student. You know, I hate to say it, but you have not arrived, right? Even if you've done a residency, which is a fantastic opportunity. I did one myself. Even if you don't do that, the reality is you have to continue to maintain a student mindset, right? Of just continuous learning. I mean, that's why you've got all the books behind you, right? same here is like I didn't go to business school, right? I didn't get an MBA or anything like that. And so what I've done in private practice, and I'm no expert, I don't claim to be any expert, but I listen to podcast after podcast about HR and about entrepreneurship and management and core values and those things. And I committed to reading, you know, journal articles as much as I can as well. So, and I try to maintain that mindset constantly of just that student mindset of continuous learning. So that'd be my biggest piece of advice is like, hey, you haven't arrived. And in order to not only, and I guess to further emphasize that is the profession is, I guess what I would want to say is like, know that you have agency. That's what I'm trying to say. Know that you have a lot of agency. Like our profession is unbelievable. We've said that multiple times, but there's so many opportunities, and you really have the power because you have this degree and you have this opportunity to make it what you want to make it. And you can go into private practice and do that. You can work, no matter what setting you choose to do, make it happen for yourself, you know, and whether that's, like I said, through an entrepreneurial mindset, with private practice, or as an associate, but just dive in, enjoy the profession, dig in, and never stop learning, really.
I love that, man. And that really resonates with me and it touches my heart because one of my core values is continuous impactful growth. And, you know, that's mentally, physically, spiritually, and, you know, of course, when it comes to just what we do, right, professionally. So I align with you 100%, man. And I really appreciate you dropping that gem, dropping that bar, because that is something that we really need to hone in on and own. Because, again, you know, with us as eye care professionals, we're the gateway into healthcare. So there's a lot that's on our back. And in order for us to continue to expand scope, we got to be knowledgeable about everything that we put our hands on. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is by exactly what you stated. Now, I kind of want to, you know, flip to the other spectrum. And I would love to ask you, what do you want to be known for when it's your turn to retire your phoropter? Or in your case, maybe your IPL device. Simply
no, I still do lots of refractions.
Well, what's the legacy, man? Because you've done so much. And I'm just curious, you know, what do you want to be known for, my friend?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, at the end of the day, like our mission at the practice is to help our patients make good decisions. And I think that kind of summarizes it for me, both with my patients as well as with other doctors, is I don't I don't ever want to be coercive or condescending or anything like that with other doctors or with my patients, but I just want to give them, I want to know and understand things so well that I can just provide, and them, not only the topic, but I want to, you know, I want to work on my empathy, and I want to work on receptivity to understand people really well so that I can match something that I know with something that I know that they need. Right. Yeah. And so I think that's probably what I want to, at the end of the day, like if patients or other doctors were to, you know, say something about me, you would say, you know, he knew me well, you know, or he knew the profession well, or he knew, whether it's, you know, or they know me as their doctor or just as a colleague, is that he provided good advice, you know, or insights, and he understood our problems well. I think that would be the best form of, you know, encouragement that I could get.
Hey, man, I love it, man. You and I, we need to hang out a little bit more because we align a little too much looking at the bookshelf, my bookshelf. This whole core values thing. I mean, even what you're saying, another one of my core values is meaningful relationships. And that's essentially what you just stated. Got to be empathetic, got to be compassionate. You got to understand the person that's in front of you. And you got to be able to take the problem that they have and marry it with a solution, but kind of walk them into what that looks like, right? So those meaningful relationships is heavy, and it'll change your practice. It'll change you professionally, but most importantly, it'll change you personally as well. So it's very important to make sure that you have those meaningful relationships. Now, Kyle, if anybody wants to get up with you and partner with you and Chris, what's the best contact information for them to do some consulting or get a part of this online course and jazz that you have going on, my friend?
Yeah, great question. Two ways you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I provide just daily insights on medical optometry there. So contact me there. Or reach out to iCode Education. You can go there and search for Comprehensive Optometry Simplified, and you can either sign up for the course or sign up for the mastermind group. Or like I said, find me through LinkedIn, and I would just, you know, it'd be a pleasure to help you where I could.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for hanging out with me today, man. This has been fantastic. I feel like I got a twin over there on the other side of the screen. Can't wait to see you at a conference, man. Let's sit down, have a, you know, a coffee, a beverage, a drink, whatever it may be, man. And let's just pick each other's brain. But continue doing what you're doing for eye care, man. You're really changing the game. You're elevating the game. You're making us understand the importance of who we are as professionals and the value that we create. So continue the great work. And for everyone out there that's listening, thank you so much for tuning in. It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover. Stay healthy, stay positive, stay blessed. And until next time, peace.
All right, colleagues, and it's a wrap. Thank you dearly for hanging out with the Defocus Media team. We hope truly something resonated with you. And if it did, be sure to give us 5 stars and make sure you follow us on all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, you named it. And our handle is at Defocus Media on all platforms. And until next time, be sure to keep it 2020, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.